Don't Move a Muscle, the podcast is starting.
Hello and welcome to Podtrivagus Totalis, a Harry Potter read-along podcast. Your hosts for this podcast are me, Cassie.
And me, Joe.
And we are back to do Chapter 8, The Potions Master, and we'll dive right in with that chapter summary. It is my turn to do the summary, and we'll jump right in. So Harry and Ron begin attending their classes at Hogwarts, one of which is potions with Professor Snape, who is the titular potions master. Snape really seems to dislike Gryffindors and favors the Slytherins, which is to be expected to some extent because he is the head of Slytherin House, but he really seems to hate Harry in particular. Mm-hmm. Harry and Ron go to Hagrid's house for tea after the potions lesson, where we learn that there was a break-in at Gringotts the day that Harry and Hagrid were there, and Harry believes that it's connected to Vault 713 and the package that Hagrid removed. It's a pretty light, short chapter, honestly.
Yeah, it was a quick one.
Yeah, of the 17, it's definitely one of the kind of throwaway ones. Doesn't that make you excited to listen to a podcast about it? No, there's like interesting stuff going on in here. It's just, it's short. I was surprised by how short it is.
Yeah, but it's just kind of an introduction to everything that's happening.
Yeah, I like that the beginning of the chapter kind of focuses on these little details about Hogwarts, you know, like there's 142 staircases and here are all the classes that they go to, and just kind of creating the magic of the setting and getting you grounded into it. So like that's some, it's hard stuff to put into a summary, but it's stuff that is important in the chapter for sure.
Yeah. And we get brief descriptions of most of his professors.
Yep. Yeah. Which I kind of think we can talk about more in depth when they like appear firsthand, you know. So, but there's Professor Flitwick, who does charms, who there's going to be a big scene with him. There's Professor Sprout, who I think doesn't really get a good scene until book two, and Professor Binns as well.
Yeah,
I do have some stuff about Professor Binns, but first we're introduced to Argus Filch and Mrs. Norris, who are definitely big characters in the first couple books.
Yeah, I think, I mean, not throughout it, but
yeah,
for a while.
Yeah, they loom large, I think. Mm-hmm. They're kind of the menace of Hogwarts for Harry. I mean, Harry is kind of the menace of Hogwarts himself. But Argus Filch is the caretaker and kind of like prison warden of the castle. He goes around and patrols with the help of his cat, Mrs. Norris.
Yeah, he and the cat communicate somehow.
Telepathically, probably.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I'm sure.
Yeah. Let's talk about etymology a little bit. Argus is definitely a fitting name. He is a giant in Greek mythology with 1,000 eyes who serves Hera as a watchman.
That's,
we can see, yeah, yeah, where that came from then, what the connection there is. Interestingly, Argus was slayed by Hermes. Interesting, because we said before that there might be a connection between Hermione and Hermes, as in like the namesake. So perhaps with Hermione's help, Argus Filch will not be as much of a problem.
Maybe she'll kill him.
Ooh, don't get into spoilers. But this Greek myth is where the phrase the eyes of Argus stems from, which indicates somebody putting you under like invasive scrutiny. So like if your boss really hates you at work and wants to fire you, you could be said to be under the eyes of Argus.
Okay.
Yeah.
And in Filch's case, his eyes are Mrs. Norris.
Yeah, that's kind of a cool thing that they say, you know, like whenever Mrs. Norris appears and sees you, Filch is going to be following in like 2 seconds. Mm-hmm. But Filch itself is a term meaning stealing something, usually of little value, like when you steal the knives from Outback Steakhouse, it's something like inconsequential to the business as, at large, but, you know, you're still swiping it.
Okay.
Do you not steal silverware from restaurants? I kind of figure that's a universal childhood experience, but now I think that my mom was just cheap and we were poor and that's where we got our silverware from.
But no, it wasn't a family event that we stole silverware.
It kind of was for us, actually, thinking about it. Like when we would go out with my uncle, I always remember my mom being really excited because my cousin was there. My cousin always had really big pocketbooks, so she could stick a lot in there.
Did you have a lot of the cups, too? And
no, we never stole cups. It was primarily knives, because the knives at Outback Steakhouse are really good, because you need them to cut steak. But I'm sure other silverware ended up in there at some point. Although, like, the first time, one of the first times we went out, not, like, us alone, but in a group, you stole a cup from Applebee's, so
yeah, well, I needed a cup for work.
Yeah.
It's reasonable.
Yeah. But back on topic, on the subject of Mrs. Norris, the name comes from Jane Austen's Mansfield Park, who, if I haven't expressed this before, Jane Austen is one of my favorite authors, but Mansfield Park is the only of her writings that I have not been able to get through because it's so boring. But Mrs. Norris, from what I remember, is just this terrible relation of Fanny Price, who's the main character of the book. And she hates Fanny, and she's super judgmental and like a huge snob, and she's the worst. Yeah, Rowling is heavily influenced, I would say, by Austen. I think she said that Jane Austen's Emma is, in her opinion, like one of the best novels she's ever read.
Okay.
Which, I agree, Emma's an amazing novel. Austen is great. We'll geek out about Austen, I'm sure, at some point. Well, you can't join in on that. But.
So it's just going to be you ranting for a
yeah.
while. Which is like, most of the podcast.
Yeah.
Most of the podcast, so.
And I liked a little line in there when she was introducing Mrs. Norris. She says that, like, it's the dearest desire of all the students to give Mrs. Norris, like, a good kick, which is kind of messed up because, like, animal abuse, but...
Well, I was surprised when Hagrid talks about Filch and Mrs. Norris. Yeah. Even he says, like, I'd love to let Fang meet her.
Yeah. Which is funny because, number one, Hagrid loves animals, and number two, Fang is useless.
Yeah.
Like, if you wanted an attack dog, Fang is not the one. But yeah, so there are two characters that will certainly show up in this novel and throughout the rest of the books. But this is the first introduction we get to them. We're also introduced to Professor Binns, who I don't think really gets like a very good scene ever. Maybe in Chamber of Secrets, actually.
I mean, the biggest thing is he's not that important.
Yeah, he's the history of magic teacher who, as far as we can tell, Harry and Ron sleep through all of his lessons and just like complain about his homework.
But, yeah, that sounds about right.
Yeah, he is the only ghost professor at Harry at Hogwarts, though.
Yeah, he is. But he was a professor beforehand.
Yes, the story is that he fell asleep in the teacher's lounge, died, got up to go teach his lesson, and just, like, didn't realize.
Yeah, he just left his body behind. Just,
yeah.
Yeah, still gotta teach.
Which is kind of like a 10-year nightmare. Like, if there's ever anybody that ever wants to be the history of magic professor at Hogwarts, because, first of all, there's exactly one wizarding school in, like, this entire segment of Europe, it seems, mm-hmm. and there's one professor for history of magic, and he's immortal. So that's a teaching position that will never be refilled, I guess.
Yeah, I guess so.
Yeah, like, in my situation, I'm just waiting for baby boomers to die, and then I'll take their jobs, but...
Nice and dark.
Yeah.
They can retire.
True. And I did a little research on Professor Binns because I'm like, there has to be something interesting we can say about him. And apparently he was inspired by a professor that J.K. Rowling had when she was in university. She says that this professor gave every lecture with his eyes closed, rocking backwards and forwards slightly on his toes.
I had a professor, not quite to that extent, but he wrote the textbook for the class. This was mm-hmm. an economics class. He wrote the textbook and then read straight from it.
Yeah. No, I remember because I sat in on that class with you that day that I threw up and passed out.
Yeah. Yeah, it was a very fun class.
Yeah, I threw up and passed out in reaction to his teaching. That's not true. But it was also like a lecture hall with like 280 students, so he could kind of get away with just like reading from the textbook.
Oh, it was much more than 200 students.
Whatever.
This was, my school had like a 2-floor lecture hall, so you could have at least 200 kids on either mm-hmm. floor.
Okay, yeah. Yeah, but like it's hard to have participation in that class. But yeah,
Rowling, well, he wasn't looking for it. So.
No. But Rowling did say that Professor Binns is like genuinely surprised when people participate in his class, which doesn't happen often. I can only think of one instance offhand.
And I'm going to guess it's Hermione.
In Chamber of Secrets, it might be Hermione who brings it up, but I'm not sure. But that's getting ahead of ourselves. I'm sure Hermione, like, tries to participate in this class, but just there's no opportunity to. But yeah, History Magic is one of the classes. We do see, like, minorly them going to Herbology and Charms and Transfiguration, but like I said, those will be more pronounced scenes in the future. So mm-hmm. we'll talk about it then. Although in Transfiguration, Professor McGonagall, we continue to just kind of learn who McGonagall is, and there's this great quote. So they're talking about how stern McGonagall is and how she doesn't give like any special favors to the Gryffindors, even though she's head of Gryffindor House. And she says, "Transfiguration is some of the most complex and dangerous magic you will learn at Hogwarts," she said. "Anyone messing around in my class will leave and not come back. You will have been warned. Then she changed her desk into a pig and back again. That made me laugh. I don't know.
But it's also really harsh. Like, if you screw up when you're 11,
I'll like expel you.
Well, maybe not expelled, but like, you can't take Transfiguration, which is a huge part of the whole.
I don't think you can drop a class at Hogwarts. Like, it's only at book 6 that Harry has an opportunity to drop a class.
Yeah, I mean, you're supposed to be in Transfiguration the whole time.
Yeah.
So I don't know what would happen if you're,
I mean, that's like the classic teacher threat. Like, I'm going to kick you out and you're not going to come back. But like, they can't.
Yeah, I totally
really
believe her.
Yeah, I believe McGonagall. In McGonagall's case, yeah. We do see the first owl post at Hogwarts as well, which is in the morning when they're having breakfast, all the owls swoop in and deliver letters and junk. Mm-hmm. And I think that's part of where my obsession with getting mail comes from. but Hagrid, what?
Yeah, Harry gets a adorable letter from Hagrid.
Yeah.
I know you have, like, it sounds kind of creepy. Like, I know you have Friday afternoons
off. It's
not creepy.
Let me read it.
No, it's really nice.
Dear Harry, I know you get Friday afternoons off, so would you like to come and have a cup of tea with me around 3? I want to hear all about your first week. Send us an answer back with Hedwig. Hagrid. It's cute. There's nothing creepy about that.
No, it's not. And especially because he's in a position where he would actually have access to it. It's not like he went and searched
for it. Yeah, it's not like he followed Harry around the castle. He's like, oh, Friday afternoons off. No, he would know that. But yeah, so Harry has that to look forward to, which helps him through this dreadful potions class, which is kind of the major scene of the chapter. And we've been introduced to Snape in some capacity before, but this is when we get the full brunt of his awfulness.
Yeah, right off the bat, he takes a couple pokes at Harry.
During roll call.
This is our celebrity.
Yeah, like, that's so messed up. Like, the class hasn't even started yet, you jerk.
And this is well after, like, we kind of skipped over this in the beginning of the chapter, but everyone is, like, going out of their way to just look at Harry in the hallways and stuff.
Yeah, he's already feeling, like, singled out. And so for Snape to be, like, going down the list and be like, Harry Potter, our new celebrity. Like, stop.
Yeah.
That's kind of my reaction to everything Snape does. Just, like, stop. Don't do that. Don't be a jerk. And I really like to... So, like, there's this whole that Harry's looking forward to the thing with Hagrid, and we have Hagrid on the minds, and when Rowling is describing Snape, she says, his eyes were black like Hagrid's, but they had none of Hagrid's warmth. They were cold and empty and made you think of dark tunnels. I thought that was an interesting kind of connection, or not, like, just a parallel that she's drawing here, that we have this warm, welcoming, inviting figure of Hagrid, and then there's Snape, who lives in the dungeon and treats everybody like human garbage.
Yeah.
Except for the Slytherins, primarily Draco Malfoy, who he seems to love. But talking a little bit about Snape's name, Severus means stern in Latin, and of course it does have that, gives us our word sever, to cut. You know, so already not positive imagery here.
Yeah.
It does also kind of connect to the Roman Emperor Septimus Severus, who, as I understand it, was pretty brutal and, like, removed all his competition for a position of power. There was something where there were, like, 5 emperors at once, and Septimus came out on top. And it wasn't by negotiating.
No, I didn't think so.
It's like that time there was the Ghost Pope, which is, like, one of my favorite pieces of European history.
Weren't there a few of them?
It was just like, there was like 3 and one of them didn't actually exist. I don't know much about history. Snape is an English verb meaning to be hard on, to rebuke, or to snub someone. Fits. Mm-hmm. Snape, the character, is inspired by an unpleasant chemistry teacher that J.K. Rowling had. And chemistry is kind of real life potions, so I guess that works.
Yeah, kind of.
And she says that Snape smells like bitterness and old shoes. She has such a gift for, like, I don't know, weird... like, old shoes, socks are constantly in these series. Like, it's just, I don't know, these... strange things that she just seems to dwell on.
I kind of thought it was interesting comparing Snape's eyes to Hagrid's, on top of what you said, but because Harry's connection with his mom is like through his eyes.
Oh yeah, true.
And we see a totally different, like, he has the same looking eyes, but they just give you a totally different feel.
Yeah, that's definitely interesting. Some people say, like, Rowling is obsessed with noses, and Jake in Harry Potter series, she always mentions people's noses, and, like, eyes, I think, recur more than any other facial feature, but I think that that's just a matter of, like, authors finding something expressive to focus on, you know, like when you look at a person, you first notice their eyes in some cases, like you have very beautiful eyes. So
I know.
yeah, no, she definitely does dwell on eyes a lot. We learn a lot about characters through their eyes.
Mm-hmm.
And
it's also just another way to describe characters.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Oh, this is what their hair looks like. Eyes, nose.
Yeah, it's just that's
they're
how you
this tall.
Yeah, describe people.
Yeah.
But no, there's for sure something important going on with the eyes there. Just again, contrasting those two characters of Hagrid and Snape.
Mm-hmm.
So Snape proceeds to be just a gigantic jerk throughout this entire chapter. He asks Harry these like really complicated questions that Harry could have no way of knowing.
And Neville, in the background, Hermione is with her hand really high in the air,
and Snape just ignores
looking for
her
an answer and just
there's a whole thing with the questions that Snape asks Harry, and it is riddled with spoilers, so I don't want to go into it. I will return to it when we get to Deathly Hallows, I'm sure, but if you have already read the books, I'll put a link on the show notes and put a spoiler warning, of course, but it's very interesting and I highly encourage anybody to read through it. But for those of you that are on your first journey through the books, it's not time yet for us to talk about that.
Yeah, I don't even recommend clicking on the link.
Yeah, don't click on the link if you have not read these books. I will put a prominent warning there. But yeah, like we said, Hermione is like bursting out of her chair to answer Snape's questions, the ones that he's
and, like,
throwing.
Each question, she gets a little bit higher into the last one.
Yeah.
She actually stands up.
Which is so cute. I love Hermione so much. But we get another instance of Harry just being incredibly sassy in this one. So on like the second or third question that Snape throws at Harry, he says, "I don't know," said Harry quietly. "I think Hermione does, though. Why don't you try her?" Which is so disrespectful, but I don't care because it's Snape.
Yeah, we're going to get a lot of sass between the two of them.
Oh, for sure. The best in book five.
Yes.
So the lesson proceeds with Snape being a jerk. Neville gets more just comical tragedy thrown at him.
Yeah, that's going to be a nice trend.
Yeah, yeah. What was it? It was something crazy here.
Oh, he gets covered in like red boils or red blisters because he put one ingredient in out of order.
Yeah.
And it melted Seamus's pot.
Cauldron.
Pot. It's just pretty much the same thing.
Okay. Yeah, he melts Seamus's cauldron and gets like covered in the potion, and he's like laying there suffering basically, and Snape is like, "You stupid idiot."
Yeah.
He says that verbatim. He's like, "Idiot boy," like whatever, and I'm like, "Take him to the hospital." Like, this poor kid. Oh, it's horrible. And I think Snape takes like 2 points from Gryffindor in the span of this class?
In the span of this class, but both from Harry.
Both from Harry. Okay, I thought one of them might have been for Neville. I didn't remember exactly. It's one for Harry's sass, and the other...
The other one was because Harry didn't warn Neville...
Oh, yeah.
Not to put that in. It was like, oh, you wanted him to screw up? You thought you'd look better?
Ugh.
Which, Harry doesn't know what he's doing.
No.
So he's definitely
it's not
paying
his
attention
job.
To what Neville's
if anything,
doing.
Like, say that to Seamus, because Seamus was working with Neville, so, like, hey, maybe, like, if you were going to be nice about this, like, hey, Seamus, maybe, like, keep an eye on it, make sure he's following the directions correctly. But knowing Snape, he probably gave them like impossible directions as well.
But it's also very complicated, and it was their first class.
Yeah.
So even if they were, you know, the typical directions, it's Neville.
Yeah. And Ron says, like, Harry is like about to retaliate when Snape takes that second point.
And he kicks him.
Yeah, he says, "Don't push it," he muttered. "I've heard Snape can turn very nasty," as if this is like just the tip of the iceberg for Snape's nastiness. That
and it is.
Somehow he gets worse. Oh, it's awful. But Ron is adorable, and he asks to go meet Hagrid with Harry, unless you have more to talk about with Snape.
I think that's about it. But he's like mid-sentence, just... "Cheer up. Snape's always taking points off Fred and George. Can I come meet Hagrid with you?"
So Harry and Ron go down to Hagrid's hut for some tea and rock cakes, which is another trend that we will see through the books, that Hagrid feeds them these horrible, hard, difficult to eat
rocks.
Yeah,
they're rocks.
They're rock cakes.
No, they're pretty much just rocks.
So Hagrid and Ron get introduced to each other. He basically says, like, "Another Weasley." He says, "I spent half my life chasing your twin brothers away from the forest." But he does ask after Charlie, who's one of Ron's brothers, who apparently was good with dragons and raised them in Romania.
He was good with
Romanian.
Animals in general.
Yeah, yeah. We'll
see
Charlie.
But yeah, dragons brought up again.
Yeah. Hagrid has always wanted a dragon, and Charlie raises them. We'll see. And probably my favorite thing about Hagrid is that he gossips about the other professors with Harry and Ron. Like, Harry and Ron, like, complain, like, oh, Snape's so mean. And Hagrid's like, yeah, he is. Which I guess is a little unprofessional, but it's Hagrid, and I love him.
Yeah.
And it's an instance of Hagrid not being able to keep his mouth shut, which we will for sure see going through.
Well, Hagrid does say, or, well, Harry does say that Snape has it out for him specifically.
Dan Hagrid gets all, like, darty-eyed, like, oh, what? Why would he not like you?
Yeah.
But he covers it up a little bit better when Harry reads a newspaper clipping.
Yes, the newspaper clipping basically says that on the same day that Harry was in Gringotts with Hagrid,
July 31st, Harry's birthday.
Yes, that one of the vaults was robbed. Mm-hmm. And that the contents had already been emptied out.
And it says earlier that day.
Yeah, earlier that day. So Harry thinks it was from Vault 713.
Which is the one that he and Hagrid emptied, where Hagrid
just grabbed like a package.
Yeah, a mysterious package.
Yeah.
On Hogwarts business. Dun, dun, dun. And that's how the chapter ends.
Pretty much. Just yeah. Harry thinks.
Yeah, it's like, what could be in the package? What's going on? I didn't dig the end of the chapter with, like, those introspective little questions. It was a little too much of the, like, this is important for me.
But also just, like, this is what you should be thinking of. Just
Yeah, it was feeding the questions kind of to the reader. Mm-hmm. Which, you know, again, it's children's literature, so we can't be that harsh about it.
And her writing does improve greatly over the next few books.
It definitely improves, and I think that it just kind of matures with the audience, too. Because she knows kind of that, I guess, people are reading these books as they grow up. And so, you know, by the seventh book, we get a lot more symbolism and the writing gets much more complicated and denser, maybe in vocabulary. So, yeah, as kind of a first pancake for her. I wouldn't say the writing is bad, but it's definitely aimed at a very young audience. And she's, I don't want to say, like, a little green, because, like, I can't write a better book than this, but, yeah, there is evidence sometimes that this is her first book. And that's kind of the chapter. So our spell of the week this week is Scourgify, which is probably the spell that Snape uses to clean out Seamus's cauldron after Neville messes it up. It's the scouring or cleaning charm. Not too hard to figure out where the name comes from. Scouring is cleaning the scouring spell. That's it. But we do have some tweets that I thought that I would bring up. So the first tweet that I wanted to enter into the record here is from my pal Jose. He says that this is in response to our ongoing conversation, I guess, about the etymology of Gringotts. In one episode, we in error stated that gringo was a French term, because I got that from the Ultimate Unofficial Guide to the Mysteries of Harry Potter, which misled me. And that was corrected for us on a previous episode by a listener. And Jose says that he always thought that gringo was Spanish for white guy, because that's how people use it. And I think we touched upon that when we corrected it at first, that it's just kind of meant to indicate an outsider. But of course, in its cultural context, it's a, I don't want to say racial term, but it's a pejorative, I guess. And then there's one more from Justine of the Cutaways podcast, which is a fellow member of our Lady Pod Squad, which Joe is not in.
Excuse me.
Because he's a man. Yeah, she does a podcast about romantic comedies and just kind of like watching the big romantic comedies throughout film history. So Justine says, you guys mentioned that it doesn't matter that the books take place during the 90s, but I thought it did, so all the previous stories match Muggle history, especially the events of 1945. We haven't learned kind of about what happened in 1945 in Wizarding history yet. That won't come until, I think, Deathly Hallows. Although, no, it is mentioned on Dumbledore's Chocolate Frog card.
Is it?
Yeah, that he defeated the wizard Grindelwald in 1945.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. And obviously there was another historical event taking place in 1945, the end of World War II. And there is a parallel drawn between those two events. But yeah, like, sure, the series is set in the 90s, so it's after 1945, but that doesn't...
It would really just change how old Dumbledore is.
Yeah, and if anything, it'd be by, like, 5 or 6 years. Because if the first book was set when it came out in 97, that's only a 7-year difference.
And Dumbledore is already...
He's already super old.
Yeah. Much older than most people live to be.
And, like, I guess you could say that, you know, theoretically, if Rowling put these books in, like, 2000, she wouldn't know, like, I don't know, like, oh, 9/11 happened, and she has to integrate that into the Harry Potter books. Like, no, these books have absolutely no bearing on Muggle history, really. So, like, yes, the 1945 thing is important, but it doesn't really, like, affect the world of Harry Potter that it was 6 years, 7 years, whatever it is, earlier than when the books exist. I don't know. It's just like this weird thing that like has no bearing on the books, but it's true and it like nags at me every day of my life. Although there are some mistakes that she makes, one big one in book four that we'll get to with the timeline. It's not big. It's an incredibly minor detail, but it's big to me.
Oh, the PlayStation?
Yeah, the PlayStation.
Okay.
Yeah, that's really the only thing that I can think of that has like any bearing on the timeline of these events, the 1945 stuff and the Nick's death day party. But other than that, it completely doesn't matter.
Yeah, not at all. And even if she started out like, this is the year the book was released, this is the year it's taking place, mm-hmm. She would have ended up behind present day anyway, mm-hmm. with the gaps between the books.
So yeah, yeah.
It doesn't make too big of a deal.
And not only that, it's not like she started writing this book in January of 1997. It came out in June of 1997. That's not like, you know, she could have started writing this book in 1990 for all we know and just said it then and didn't feel like changing it later on. So
yeah,
who knows? It's just this thing that like, it doesn't matter at all, but it's there. But yeah, so thank you for the tweets, everybody. Thank you for interacting with us. That's kind of it. So you can send us an email to owlpost@podtrificus.totalis. Can leave us a review on iTunes or any other podcast service that you like. That always does help us out, gives us feedback, and it does help your ranking a little bit on podcast things. Not that we care about such things as that, but it lets people know that this is a quality show that they should listen to. You can find us on all of those podcast apps, iTunes, Pocket Casts, Podcast Addict. I don't know, whatever you use. There's so many out there. There are a lot of podcast apps on there, and we are on all of them, or we should be. So if we're not, let us know. We're also on YouTube. You can listen to the episodes on there. We're on social media at Twitter, Podtrificus, or just search Podtrificus Totalis. We have a Facebook page as well, and a Tumblr page that I'm very bad at keeping updated. So maybe that'll be your new job, Joe.
You mean I'm going to have to do something for this podcast?
Besides sit there and look pretty? Yeah. And we have a website.
Again, that doesn't even help.
We have a website, podtrificustotalis.com, where you can find detailed show notes, subscribe to the show and listen to the show and just do things that you would want to do on a podcast website. And you can join us next time for Chapter 9.
The Midnight Duel.